Did you ever hear the story of the very rich man who learned he was soon going to die? Panicked, the man prayed that he could bring some of his wealth with him. That was what was important to him. An angel appeared and informed the man that he'd got permission for the man to bring one bag of wealth. The man was so excited. So he found the biggest bag that he could and thought tactically, how can I get as much of my wealth as possible in this bag? Gold bars, he decided, that would be the key. They fit together nicely, they can stack, they're worth a lot, perfect. He finished packing, and soon after he died. When he got to the gates of heaven, he had his bag with him, and St. Peter says, just before you come in, I just need to take your bag and check what's inside. Peter unzips the bag, looks inside, and is puzzled. The man asks him, what's up? Peter says, I'm just confused. Why have you brought so many pavement slabs? Of course, that's a silly and not true story, but it goes to show how perspective can shape our priorities. If you know that the streets are paved with gold in heaven, why would you bother spending your life collecting it to take it with you? We know the feeling. Our priorities changing because of our perspective on our circumstance. Here we are at the beginning of Philippians. Paul is writing this letter from prison, probably in Rome, after being arrested for preaching the gospel of Jesus. He's likely to be heading toward a trial where a guilty verdict could mean death. The Philippians know Paul's situation. They're worried for him, as any of us would be, and they sent aid and support to Paul, likely fearing the worst, because Roman prison wasn't friendly. So Paul sends them this letter back to update them of his situation. But it's not a letter of lament like we might expect in his circumstance, but a letter of joy in those circumstances. How can Paul be so joyful? Because of his perspective on his affliction. He is suffering, but that which he prioritizes the most is flourishing. Paul writes to the Philippians to tell them to know that the gospel advances. That's there in verse 12. Now, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. The gospel advances, even in discouraging circumstances and even through false motives. We're going to deal with those two side by side. First of those is how Paul starts his letter. Oddly, despite writing to the Philippians to update them on his situation, Paul doesn't really talk much about his situation. Only what comes out of it for the gospel. I want you to know that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. Theologian Karl Barth summed it up well. To the question how it is with him, the apostle must react with information as how it is with the gospel. This is how central the gospel of Jesus was to Paul's well-being. Is the gospel of Jesus Christ being proclaimed? Well, that will tell you how I am much more than my circumstances will. And the news on the front of the gospel advance is good. What has happened to him has served to advance the gospel. From the outside, Paul's imprisonment would have looked discouraging. The stifling of the gospel by cutting off its greatest advocate. But in writing to the Philippians, Paul refocused the attention off of him and onto his purpose. His purpose is to preach the gospel, and the gospel is being preached, not just in spite of his circumstances, but through them. His imprisonment, while unpleasant, unjust, and demeaning, is advancing the gospel in ways that wouldn't have been possible otherwise. Imagine being the first Philippian readers getting this letter from Paul, feeling discouraged and expecting the worst, but instead hearing the progress the gospel continues to make in people both of faith and not through Paul's circumstances. It would have been exciting to this young church, wouldn't it? I mean, maybe you're excited hearing about it now, 2,000 years later. It is exciting, not just then, but now and today, as we'll see in a bit. Here, the gospel is making huge advances in two groups of people. The first is the guards. In verse 13, as a result, verse 13, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I'm in chains for Christ. Now, the Greek word for guard here is praetorium, and the praetorian guard, they weren't your normal prison officers. They were the MI5 of the Roman Empire. They were the personal bodyguards for governors and emperors. They were intelligence officers. They were emergency firefighters. They were assassins. With the Praetorian Guard, you could be the emperor for the right price. Prisoner guard was probably one of their less glamorous tasks. You didn't necessarily just sit by a door and make sure no one leaves. Prisoner guard often involved being shackled to the prisoner on a rotating shift. I wonder how you would feel being shackled to a prison officer 24/7. Probably pretty miserable, right? But can you imagine Paul's response to being shackled to someone day and night? That great evangelist, the apostle to the Gentiles, the man who has already seen Roman jailers come to faith. Would it be Paul chained to the guard, I wonder, or would it be the guard chained to Paul? This is Paul's situation. And though probably still not very pleasant, we get to see the result of it there in verse 13. As a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard, the whole Praetorian, and to everyone else that I'm in chains for Christ. A constant stream of guards, one after another, attached to a man whose priority is telling people about Jesus. Can you imagine the guards going back to the barracks? Oh, that guy, he just doesn't shut up about this Jesus. He's in prison for this Jesus. When's he going to realise this Jesus is making his life worse? How can he be so confident and hopeful and full of praise when the message of this Jesus guy has put him in chains? Every day, more guards, the same story, until everyone knows who Paul is and what he's all about. The gospel is advancing. And it's not just advancing within the prison walls, but also in the streets outside. Paul's imprisonment has given confidence to other believers to proclaim their faith without fear. We see that in verse 14. Because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. They see how he presses on in the midst of miserable circumstances, and it encourages them to do likewise. Paul wants the Philippians to know this. They're to see this encouragement, this example in the face of discouraging circumstances. They're to know that the gospel is advancing. Like Paul, the Philippians were facing discouraging circumstances. We hear about that a bit later in the letter. Like Paul and like the Philippians, we will face discouraging circumstances that might seem defeating and disheartening, but God chooses to use these circumstances to proclaim his glory. The prison cell may not look like a pulpit, but neither did a dead man hanging on a tree look like the saviour of humanity. Paul is not surprised that his affliction is being used to advance the gospel. This is God's typical way of working. That's what he wants the Philippians to know. It begs the question, doesn't it, of where God might work like this in our lives and draw on this example of Paul for us. When do we get discouraged? Maybe it's regular news stories of Christians in deep water for standing up for their faith, or losing their job for sharing their faith, or offering to pray for someone. Maybe we think, I could be next, and I don't want to be next. Maybe it's standing firm on a position of faith and facing backlash or mockery from friends, family, colleagues, other Christians. The possibility of being cancelled, no platformed, rejected, abused, threatened for your faith, a reality for millions of Christians around the world. Knowing that those circumstances exist or could exist for us, is that going to make us more confident to share our faith or more likely to keep it to ourselves? I think the answer to that question is in another question. What are our priorities? Is it the good of the gospel, or is it comfort in our circumstance? That's the question, isn't it? Now, fortunately, we don't often have to choose between extremes of those two, at least not to the extent of prison and death. Though one day we might. But when we're faced with the option of sharing the good news of Jesus, knowing that unpleasant circumstances may follow, is our confidence in God to make that situation work for his good, or do we want the situation to work out for our good, our comfort? When the gospel is front and centre in our lives, when that's the priority like it was for Paul, it doesn't matter what else happens to us, as long as that good news is shared. You know what the fastest growing church is in the world at the moment? Anyone want to take a guess? It's the Iranian church, the church in Iran. In second place, anyone know? Afghanistan. They're number 9 and number 1, respectively, on the Open Doors World Watch List. Two of the worst places in the world to be a Christian. It's not a good selling point for the church there, is it? Not a good advert, yet the church is growing there. Now tell me, how does the church grow in a place where talking about your faith can get you arrested or killed? It takes believers believing that the good news of Jesus is good news, even if it takes them to bad places. If you believe good news, then you share good news. Do you believe good news? Then there is no situation that you will face where God's words cannot prevail. Now, a quick side note, I'm not saying that we should all run out of church today and fearlessly yell the gospel at people at random. We do want to tell everyone about the good news of Jesus, but we want to do so with compassion, consideration, empathy, understanding, love, listening to them. There's only one thing here that Paul says we should be speaking without, that the brothers and sisters are speaking without, and that's fear. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what holds many of us back now. We fear the consequences of proclaiming Christ because those consequences could be very, very real for us. But friends, we worship a God who is also very real, and he remains real in any and all circumstance we face. Don't let our fear of man cloud that. Don't let our fear of discouraging circumstances cloud how good the gospel of Jesus is for everyone. Brothers and sisters, prioritize the gospel. Just look at these examples of faith in the gospel. Paul, the church around him in Rome, the Philippians, modern-day Iran and Afghanistan. Sharing faith will come with discouraging circumstances, but know, friends, that the gospel advances through discouraging circumstances. That's true for Paul. It was true for the Philippians, and it's true for us. Even when situations are painful, when we're afflicted, when we face suffering, God can use those moments for the advancement of his gospel. The gospel advances even through discouraging circumstances, and it advances even through wrong motives. Imagine for me that you're in a business partnership. People love your product, and it's getting traction with big business names and that kind of thing. Now imagine your partner in the business suddenly announces that they're leaving to set up on their own. Not only that, they've got a deal set up with a big brand who will take the product on and them, but not you. How would you feel being sidelined? Watching from the wings, watching them gaining acclaim and success while you're left with nothing. Anyone think they'd be happy? You'd really have to love that product and believe in the goodness of the product being out there and distributed in order to see it go on without you. Oh, it doesn't matter if I'm doing it, as long as it's out there. The priority is the product, not my involvement, not the motives of my partner. A similar situation is unfolding here around Paul. The other believers are all proclaiming the gospel fearlessly, but not all do it because they support Paul. Look with me at verse 15. It is true that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. We're presented with two types of preacher, and these few verses are evenly balanced between the two. Some preach out of envy and rivalry, some out of goodwill. The latter out of love, the former out of selfish ambition. The loving preachers do so knowing Paul is in chains for defending the gospel. The selfish do so supposing that they can make his suffering worse. One has true motives, one false. Maybe the selfish preachers see the gap now that Paul is out of the way. The big apostle in prison, my turn to take center stage. Like the understudy in a Broadway musical who prays for the star to get sick so they can finally have the spotlight. They're selfish, ambitious, not sincere in their preaching. They even expect that their actions will worsen Paul's affliction. I mean, I'd be furious if I was Paul. Not only am I in prison, but now I've got to deal with these guys who are causing me problems as well. Anyone else feel the same way? But that's not where Paul goes. Verse 18, but what does it matter, says Paul. So what? Verse 18, the important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or from true, Christ is preached. The important thing is Christ is preached. Paul has his priorities in order. For Paul, the gospel is going out, and that is what's most important, not the motives behind it. Now, we shouldn't dismiss motives entirely. Paul's going to deal with selfish ambition later in chapter 2. But what is most important, the priority, is that Christ's death, resurrection, and the forgiveness of sins are being proclaimed. Now, importantly, we're not talking about false teachers here. Paul is talking here about people who teach the gospel of Jesus truthfully, but for the wrong reasons. They have false motives, not false theology. Picture two churches across the road from one another. Both teach the Bible faithfully, but one of the vicars realizes that they're not as well loved as the vicar across the road, so they change their preaching style. They make themselves more charming, more approachable. The same message, just a new style, and the church starts to grow. The other church sees this growth and enviously wants some of that, so invests in things like high-tech PA and AV so they can submit their services to more people online. Now, the first church responds by setting up a street preaching mission in the town centre. So as people join the area, they're the first church that they hear about. It's the same message they're preaching, but now they're doing it to be seen and admired. We wouldn't label these people as false teachers, I imagine, but we might question their motives for their actions, why they're doing what they're doing. Paul's confidence is that even though these preachers have false motives, the gospel is going out. People are hearing the true story of how Jesus died on the cross for their sins, how he rose to new life and is seated at the right hand of the Father in heaven today, how he promises the same for those who repent and trust in him. If you're feeling like you want to worship, then you're understanding why Paul wasn't making the motives the main focus, because it is good news when the good news goes out. It's good news when the good news goes out, and that is why Paul finishes with this, our final shorter point: rejoice when the gospel advances. Rejoice when the gospel advances. That's what Paul does. Verse 18. Because of this, I rejoice. Because Christ is preached, I rejoice. To him, the gospel is the most important thing. Not the means or the motives. The message matters most. And as long as the message, the good news of Jesus' death and resurrection, is being proclaimed, then Paul rejoices, because that is, and always has been, his priority. Is it ours? We might get caught up in the human element of gospel witness, the who is preaching and how. Well, that's not how it should be done. Them, really? They only want to hear the sound of their own voice. Maybe we want to be the church that causes gospel growth off the back of events like Roots of Jazz. Maybe we want a day like Pentecost, suddenly loads of new believers just joining our church because of our event, because of our church, because of our teaching. We often can see impure motives in others, but we need to be aware of our own tendencies to fall into them too. Because when we think like either of these ways, like we're right and someone else is wrong, or that we want to be the ones growing God's church, then we move our eyes off of Jesus' mission and we start to create our own. We become like those vicars from earlier, playing a numbers and results game, drawing our joy from that. That's not Paul's game. For Paul, the rejoicing doesn't come from church growth. Did you notice that? We never hear of the Praetorian Guard become believers. We never hear of the many preaching about Christ, whether through goodwill or ill, are fruitful in their ministry. Just that the gospel advanced. That's when Paul starts rejoicing, not when they're baptized, not when they believe. Joy starts when people hear the gospel. Paul's priority is the gospel. That's what causes him to rejoice. Rejoice, friends, in Jesus' mission, because it is better than ours. Rejoice when people hear about Jesus. Rejoice when the good news goes out, whoever delivers it, whoever hears it. However it gets out there, rejoice that it is out there. Rejoice no matter the circumstances, because the rest is secondary. Hearing about Jesus is more important than hearing from us. That is Paul's priority. That is Paul's joy. Let us share in that same joy. All around the world today, in all sorts of situations, for all sorts of reasons, in all sorts of languages, people are hearing the gospel for the first time. That might even be you here now. Let us rejoice in that. People are hearing of how Jesus saves them from their sin. People are hearing that through Jesus, they might have new life for eternity. People are hearing the good news. That's today. That's now. That's not 2,000 years ago. I told you, it's still exciting. The gospel of Jesus Christ is advancing even through discouraging circumstances and even through wrong motives. So let us know that and let us rejoice. Let me pray.